This is the Fabric Podcast. Being fabric isn't something any of us know exactly how to do, and yet it's less about knowing than it is about simply being. We've been using those farmers market words of fresh, organic, and local, and in this episode, Brother Timothy Francik helps us smile and wonder and look at being fabric in an organic way.
I go by Brother Timothy, which is not a religious term at all. It's a sense that we're all related. It actually came from that song that we sang before, We Must Be Siblings. We can sing it to the falls and the creek and the trees here too. We're learning more and more every day about the relationships. And I'm so glad to be part of Fabric today. I've been here many times as a singer and as a songwriter, and it's a tribute to them, to Fabric, to us, that I'm here saying a few words today, because this isn't my usual capacity with Fabric, that I do this kind of a thing, and I haven't been with the community regularly over the years, but more sporadically, so don't blame them for what I say, but I'm just hoping that we can bring a few ideas today that are grist in the mill for us each. Speaking of the mill, that reminds me of ye old mill at the state fair. I was at the state fair yesterday, and so I did eat some cheese curds, which clouds up my third eye for a couple of days, so we'll see how this goes today. I want to say something. I don't know how this will go, but please don't stand on any formality. One of the things we want to do, we have some Legos here and we have some clay here. We're going to start with Lego. I would love it if you'd make, anybody would make a humanoid, any sort of human shape out of Lego would be awesome. So I want to just bring a few thoughts here. And the Lego can happen right here. It's just fine. The topic this week, last week, Melissa eloquently brought fresh, the word fresh. Topic this week, organic. So I was thinking about this word organic, so popular these days. And I had a lot of different ideas until I got word yesterday morning that a close friend of mine had passed away, and it took me by surprise. And so I just kind of shifted gears. So I knew that they had cancer and that they had a rough case of it. And I knew that they're going to be living with the cancer until their last days. But sometimes, which is great, people will live with cancer for many, many years. And I had hoped that was the case. And I hadn't talked with my friend for a couple years. But our lives ran parallel, and I was changed by them for a couple of years, about 10 years ago. Nelson Mandela said in his inaugural address, "We are born to manifest God's glory within us. It's not just in some of us, but it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission. As we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others." So, this friend of mine's freeing of themselves was brave in their lifetime, and it helped me to free myself over time also, which is an ongoing process. I'm not pretending to say that, oh, I'm all freed up right now, but we work on that. So from the outside, my childhood was a simple and beautiful one. I grew up on the western edge of town, kind of where Ridgedale is now. I grew up out there where Ridgedale wasn't before, when there was still riffraff out on that end of town, and I grew up in the marshes. On that end of town, I had a mom, a dad, three siblings, a dog. And we went to church. We drove into downtown Minneapolis every Sunday to a place known as the Swedish Tabernacle. And it was like a mega church for Swedes in like the 50s and 60s. There were like 1,000 people that would, and in their big sanctuary, they'd speak Swedish in the first part of the 20th century. When I came into it, I would spy on the Swedish service, which was much smaller, much grayer looking, but I was enamored with this other language that was being spoken. And then we would meet in the big sanctuary and, of course, speak English. But it seemed to my family, to my parents, as what kids do as an educator, what kids do is they watch you as the adult. They don't listen to you. Don't get that for a moment that you think they listen to you. They watch you. They watch what you do and how you are in the world. And I watched my parents and I saw that they wanted us to believe, and they believed that the church, what was happening at the church, was the most central thing in our household and the most central thing beyond work, beyond neighbors, whatever. The church teachings were the most important thing. So I took in those stories as a child so deeply. And I remember my Sunday school teacher, who was actually my godfather, also a friend of the family, and we'd sit at these kidney-shaped tables. I was in like first grade, and he would teach us these stories, Bible stories, and I took them in so deeply. And they are magic, these stories. And also, I want to say, as I became a teenager, I became aware that there were also constraints in the teachings, and these were not in the sacred text necessarily. I figured out afterwards, but rather they were added to. This is what we tend to do. We can't help it, but added to the sacred text in kind of in a blended way were all kinds of social norms and fears and controls. And I didn't know that, of course, back then. And as I became a teenager and then into my early 20s, I realized that I was not feeling very free. Things like this, like a sexual relationship was supposed to be monogamous for your whole life. That might be a good idea, but it doesn't mean you're going to go to Hades if you breach that one, right? But that's what I was taught. And also that your partner is supposed to be of the opposite gender. That was taught most certainly to me, and that it was mixed in with the teachings. Also, if you're sharing something material with a friend, you're supposed to take the smaller piece. Well, that's kind of good etiquette, I think. Rock music was full of ideas that would lead us astray. That was definitely something. It's probably why I became a musician for the rest of my life. I was supposed to be a peacemaker. And I was supposed to do that by putting my ideas aside if there was conflict. Okay? I was supposed to be a peacemaker by putting my convictions aside if there was conflict. And the list goes on and on. And I recall by about 22 years old that I was feeling what I would now call depressed and in need of a good therapist, which it would take another 6 years to encounter. And I really didn't know. I did not know who I was. I kept giving my voice away, something that the local poet and treasure, Robert Bly, calls suicidal generosity. He's not saying that you're suicidal necessarily, but he's saying that there's a kind of generosity that your identity is done away with internally. Too generous. You lose your voice completely in the world. And so this is something that I somehow picked up in the sacred teachings of my childhood church. I had lost my sense of voice. I had lost my sense of wonder. And my wonder for the world just started to dry up. Here I am, 59 years old, and I've spent my life still loving those old stories. I do. They're in me very deeply. But also untangling myself from the toxic aspects of my childhood religion. Now, my wife, Carrie, we've been married for quite some time. She went to St. Olaf College and had the privilege of going to Thailand in her senior year of college there. And she came back and we got to talking. We liked talking about things. She said, oh my gosh, when I was in Thailand, people are all Buddhist and they were so superstitious. Like, here I am in America going like, oh my gosh, Buddhists, they're just like enlightened. What's going on over there? They're just so calm and centered. And she's saying like in Thailand, the Buddhists that she was around and living with were so afraid if they didn't remember to leave food out at night for the spirit, the hungry spirits that would come by. They were mortified if they had forgotten something like that. So this thing isn't just like a Christian phenomenon. It's, I think, a religious phenomenon, a way that people attach fears to sacred teachings. So back to my friend that passed away this week. They were a third-generation pastor in a very specific church, and they told me this somewhere along the way. They said, Tim, when my dad died, he had been a pastor his whole life, and he was bitter. And I don't want to be bitter. I just want to pursue my path ahead with freedom. And so they went ahead and they made changes and they stepped away from a very robust church where they had worked for 20 years and they finished the last few years away from town in a small, quiet church so they could get the lowest pension, qualify for the lowest pension that they could. And then after those 25 years, they took their grandfather's robes, pastoral robes, a family heirloom. They took their grandfather's robes, waded into a river, and let the robes go away down the river, watching. And they described to me with such beauty that act of letting the robes go. And then they moved away to a new town. They were already a good artist, and they just dove right in and started creating paintings that to me were mind-blowing paintings of simple people, the same people that they had talked about from the pulpit, but now no words, faces from the newspaper, neighbors, immigrants, relatives. And they were more successful than they thought they'd ever be. And then they came along the cancer diagnosis. But that image of the family heirloom robes flowing away, I hold that image dear. A kind of letting go of their logical and secure path, a kind of turning towards wonder, a kind of turning towards life with a capital L. So this is not a talk, certainly, against the church. I hold the church dear to me. It's where I come from. But for some of you, the church is your personal path. It's your new path. It's a gold mine. And for others, it might be like me, a kind of a sticky trap that we have to work on our whole life. Fabric, this community wants you to be a thread, whoever you are. All the chemicals and synthetics that go into our foods that are not organic and our fabrics that are not organic these days, those are meant to control. Those are meant to create a lot of one consistent thing. But fabric, this community, with this week's word, organic, fabric wants to weave an odd, kind of quirky, different threads together into a bumpy and interesting, strong fabric community. There's no formula other than please tend your garden. Whatever that means. That's the formula. Please tend your garden. Stay alive. The community can support that process. If you want to float your robes away and start again, the community can support that process. If you're already alive in your current situation, the community can support that process. I love this quote. There's a writer, Mary Catherine Bateson. She may have passed away recently at a ripe old age, but she's the daughter of Margaret Mead, the anthropologist. So Mary Catherine Bateson was around all these thinkers in her youth and eventually became one herself. And she was at a conference I was at, and she defined wisdom. Now, we throw around this word wisdom all the time, but she defined wisdom as this: half experience, we knew that part, half experience and half wonder. And she reminded us that children are geniuses of wonder. Just that's what you have been, so you know what it feels like. And you can watch the little ones around you and watch their face, watch how they engage at the beach, watch how they engage Lego, watch how they engage the grass, and watch their face. They're geniuses of wonder. They're naturally in wonder. And somehow, we can lose our way with wonder over the years. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It just can happen. But if wisdom is half experience and half wonder, then we better ask ourselves, what is my relationship as an adult with wonder, with a capital W? How do I conjure wonder? Our society likes to compartmentalize, at least I do anyway, when I say, oh, there's that person's a lawyer, and you think you might understand something about the inner life of that person. I don't know why we do that. That person's a house painter. That person, oh, they're a singer. That person's a computer coder. And we have our ideas about these things. But you are given your own sense, a very specific sense of wonder. Each of us, each of you, has your own sense of wonder. No one can show you what your wonder is. That's your responsibility. We can be inspired by each other, but no one can show you. And it's not a static thing. Bob Dylan said in his career, he would sing, each record seemed to have a different voice on it. He was moving through the evolution of himself. I think that's part of wonder, too. So we've been having some Lego building here into humanoid form, and we can kind of, would you hold them up? Would you hold up that little, that, I love how little that person's head is compared to their body. That is nice. Thank you. One great. Any other humanoids that have shown up? Oh, there's one that's running, I think I can see, that's coming into form. Other people that have been made here? Can you hold up your creation? That one looks like a something a person could climb upon. I like that very much. And then here, this one, would you? You're almost there. Hold that one up. We got a humanoid that is in action. Very cool. I would not have thought of that one. So I want you to come, if you're willing, and we're going to shift gears out of Legoland, which has been cool. Thank you for doing that. And we have Clay here. I'd love to also see more humanoids, human forms out of Clay. And you can be working while we're finishing up here today. So fun to just watch the faces and watch the hands of all the workers making their creatures. I made this little guy, I don't know if it's a guy, this humanoid here on display. But I asked around during the time, what was the kids that, the people that did that did both Lego and clay, what did they notice? I don't know if this is helpful, but I just asked them. One of them said, well, your hands get dirty with the clay. Your hands get dirty. Also, you can be more exact with the clay. You can make a little beard if you want, or five pointy, like a star-shaped human being. And someone said that the Lego just kind of fits cleanly together. The Lego is harder. A few people said that. Someone said they stepped in their bedroom on a Lego at night, and that hurt. We've all done that one. And someone said you can really shape the clay however you'd like. So that's what we heard from the mostly the smaller people, but there were a couple adults weighing in on that. So I want to remind you and remind myself, we have to do this periodically, that we are made of this stuff all around us, the same stuff that makes this tree, the same stuff that's flowing by us here down to the Mississippi, and the same stuff that makes that acorn, that we're made of that stuff. And if we want to talk about organic, we've all heard this kind of a cliche, but it still kind of wows me when we talk about the word organic. Everything was organic. All food was organic. All clothing was organic before 1920 or so, to the beginning of time. This idea of organics came in about the 1940s, about 10 years after pesticides started being used and synthetics, plastics, and things like that in the 20s and 30s, it came on strong. Maybe you know more about that history than me, but I'm so intrigued by, for the last millions of years, it was always organic. We come from that world. Our bodies are made of that world. It's interesting to kind of juxtapose the Legos and the clay as we think about some of these issues. I just want to remind you of a couple of things. This quote that Nelson Mandela used, "We are born to manifest God's glory." We don't want to get hung up on the word God. Some people might call upon a very, very deep wisdom of in their psyche. So we are meant to manifest that glory within us, and it's not just in some of us. It is in every single one of us. We could also say we're meant to manifest the wonder that's in us, and it's not just in some of us, but it's in every one of us. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. I want to share just one last thought that this summer, I'm a teacher over at the Waldorf School, and we do these wild things for training sometimes. So this summer, I was out in San Diego, and this kind of guru of marionettes, this woman that she says she creates heaven on earth, and I believe her, because if you watch children watching a little a fairy tale, might be hundreds of years old fairy tale, done with marionettes, it's not meant to be funny or super entertaining. It's meant to be like this serene and beautiful and deep experience. And I was able to make my own little puppet, marionette, this summer. And we, filled the cotton head with organic wool. And then we dyed the skin color, and we dyed the silks for the body of these marionettes. And the woman that was leading this whole workshop, she had worked with Navajo people to learn about dyeing with organic dyes or nature dyes, dyes color from nature. And she said that the philosophy, which really struck me, is the color that comes is good. Rather than our impulse to control, like, how did you get that amazing red? How did you get that amazing gold? And then trying to make a formula out of it. When we are combining colors to go after another color that we wanted, she would say, don't think about it too much. The color that comes is good. A kind of faith that we're working with these rich and beautiful elements. Have faith that the one that comes, you'll accept it, and it will be good. The color that comes is good. And we can think of our wonder that way, where we're brought with our wonder in our life, and the color that comes is good. And then we can bring a vital person. We can be tending our personal garden. We can bring a vital person to a community like this. But sometimes we're not a vital person. Lord knows I know all about that, and we can be held in a community like this. So at Fabric, we want all your quirks, your complexities. You don't have to be a Christian. You might be agnostic or a Jew or a Buddhist. That would make us even more real and more beautiful. We're just here to support each other as we do the individual work of keeping wonder alive in our own life. So I want to just finish up with a poem that I love very dearly. I think it's a medicine for this time. And I want to do it with my guitar, and I'll introduce it a little bit. The poem comes from a gentleman that just passed away a couple years ago. He lived in England at the time of his passing, named Roger Keyes. Roger Keyes was a university professor of medieval armor or something like that, Asian. history. And he was not a poet, so this is a great tribute to just finding some new turf for himself. But he was not a poet, considered a poet, but he wrote these words. And he studied, apparently, Hokusai. Now, Hokusai is the is a woodblock artist. He would carve wood and then use ink and press it onto a material. You can see in your program one of Hokusai's most famous images. Hokusai died in 1850, so living, you know, a couple hundred years ago in Japan. So Roger Keyes, the writer of this poem, talks about Hokusai from a very personal perspective. And it's called Hokusai Says. So he's kind of speaking for Hokusai in this poem. Roger Keyes, Hokusai Says. Hokusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention. Notice. He says, keep looking. Stay curious. He says, there is no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get more who you really are. He says, get stuck. Accept it. Repeat yourself as long as it's interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. He says, every one of us is ancient. He says, every one of us has a body. He says, every one of us is frightened. He says, every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says, everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees, wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside you. He says, it doesn't matter if you draw or write books. It doesn't matter if you saw wood or catch fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home and stare at the ants on your veranda or the shadows of the trees and grasses in your garden. It matters that you feel. It matters that you care. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Contentment is life living through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. Peace is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Look, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.